from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
I don't understand why you can't just be happy about the participation and just roll forward, but instead you have to throw around words like disappointed. And it just starts the show off on kind of a, like, what do you think?
On a bummer note?
Or you think you're these people's dads that you say right in, and when they don't, you could say you're not angry, you're just disappointed?
I think, you know what I think? I think that there are people who secretly out there wanted to remind themselves to write in and then completely forgot when they got home. Because it's so funny, most of the ones that I got said exactly that, saying, oh, I just remembered. I had to actually mention it twice for some people to remember. I understand, most of these people listen to it in their cars, you know, when they're working out and stuff like that, and you tell yourself, note to self, gonna write to the Good Atheist. But I mean, come on, like, how many times do we make notes to ourselves about stuff we want to do, and then we completely forget about it?
Well, I got to give you credit, though. This is not the case for you, because didn't you just write an email to Jean-Claude Van Damme?
That is correct. You know what? I've decided anytime I say I'm going to do something, I'm just going to do it now, you know?
That's a pretty big order, because you're a huge talker.
I'm a big talker. Well, you know, I said that I'd do it. I didn't necessarily say that I'd do it well. Yeah, actually, the other day I wrote an email to Jean-Claude Van Damme, and the reason is actually because I was watching one of his movies, JCVD, which is
the new one.
The new one.
The new one, which is kind of like a spoof on. It's kind of a spoof on him.
Yeah, it's a self kind of parody thing. But there was a certain amount of, I don't know how to describe it. I guess a certain amount of openness that I wasn't necessarily expecting from the movie, and I kind of enjoyed it. So I actually sent a letter over to Jean-Claude because I think I understood how he felt. I think I understood the message that he was trying to convey, and I just wanted to sort of like reach out there and try to make a connection. It wasn't because I'm like, ooh, I want to be friends with Jean-Claude because he is famous and I will be famous through him. I mean, I don't care. I just want to say, hey, I really enjoyed what you were trying to say, what the movie was really all about, and you know, I can understand, you know, from his perspective, the kind of vibe that I got is that Jean-Claude Van Damme is kind of a guy who has a pretty big heart, who doesn't necessarily feel as though he deserves his own fame. You know, because what does he do? He goes around kicking people. I understand at the end of the day, you're probably like, who the hell am I? You know, what makes me so special?
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's a chance he'll get that email and it'll be like, wow, this person tried to connect with me and they just don't get it.
I don't know. That's the whole thing, though. I mean, at least tried to find that out. I mean, I don't mind if he turns around and says, you got it completely wrong. I'm like, okay, that's fine. I mean, people get it wrong. But you might as well just try. You know, you might as well put yourself out there because, I mean, at the end of the day, who gives a shit? Odds are he's just going to put it in his delete box and it won't matter. But it would have been ridiculous for me to assume that it was pointless to write. You know, I don't think anything is pointless. You would be surprised. Sometimes the most amazing things can happen from, you know, kind of an impulse thing. Anyways, let's deal with some of the questions. I sort of broke it down to, you know, I received a couple questions which weren't actually questions, so I disregarded these ones because they were more like statements.
What, they kind of cheated?
It's not that they cheated. It was actually because they were... Some of them, rather than asking me questions, were just saying, I think this is an important issue.
And why don't you guys talk about it?
Well, there was no question about it.
I don't mind that. What's wrong with that?
I actually prefer sort of like specific questions. Because here's the thing. I don't want to read on the air an email that is like essentially 500 or 600 words long. We have to kind of like be fair that I don't want to read the entire time.
I know, but how about this? Just say this person thinks, you know, summarize it and then we can go at it. I think that's perfectly fine, but I it's not my show. You run it however you want to run it.
That's what
tell
we're
people that you're disappointed in them and you don't
I
actually
didn't say
answer
I was disappointed.
Answer
I said
any
I understood.
These people
I said
say.
I understood. I said I understood that sometimes when you put yourself a mental note, you don't always do what you wanted to do.
And when you don't follow up, you disappoint Daddy Jake.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay, let's deal first with Pepe, who wrote a question. Yes, that's
a real name. He followed the rules.
He followed the rules, the specific rules. And here's his question. I have a question of my own. After being agnostic for 4 years, I recently became full atheist. I've been slowly coming out to my friends and family, most of whom are not hardcore believers, but Catholics nonetheless. They usually go to church only for weddings and funerals. Well, most of my friends say the same thing to me, which is, you have to believe in something, at least in the supreme power that everything created, or even if he or she does not listen to us or grant us wishes. Some of them even have to, Some of them even have said that religion is bad because it's man-made and not the true divine will of God, that no man can really interpret what that is. Since they are not really fundamental or hardcore, I usually have little to respond with to their comments. Also, let me make this clear. I'm not looking to change their minds, since everyone is entitled to their own beliefs. But what should I say to them, to that kind of response? Okay, why don't you take this one first? What would you say to, you know, if you were in his situation?
I wouldn't say anything, because why would you try and smash these people's... I mean, I kind of find it quaint and nice that they say, oh, you got to believe in a higher power because it's just a good feeling and this and that. And I'm like, well, this is the whole problem. You come out and be gay, but don't try and F them in the A, if you know what I mean. It's the same thing with atheism, man. It's like, come out of the closet, tell people you are an atheist. But if somebody else is like, well, having sex with women is really good, you don't feel like you have to be like, well, sex with men is better.
Because I don't actually think that's what they're trying to say.
The holes are tighter and you get it more often. It's just not for everybody, and I know that I kind of fluctuate based on how I'm feeling or what I've eaten or what I've been reading lately, but you know, right now I'm on a tip where I'm like, I really don't care if there are believers out there that believe stupid things, so long as they stay out of a few important areas, you know. And now that Obama's back in power, I'm like, who cares anymore?
You know what?
He'll steer
Obama.
This shit.
Obama has ripped like away from you your anger. That's your problem.
Yeah, I'm just chillaxing now.
He believes in hope. Okay, here's what I think you should do. Now, first of all, Ryan's idea would be completely valid if they weren't trying to tell him, well, you have to believe in something. Because it would be the equivalent of saying, well, you have to have sex with women if a guy was coming out as gay. It's just, it's not even something that they mean, you know, cruelly. They're just basically saying, well, that doesn't make any sense.
Like you're lying?
I don't necessarily mean lying. They're just telling him, well, you know, that's all well and good, but you really haven't thought this out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is what essentially they're saying.
Okay.
And I can understand, like, my response to them would be, well, listen, I understand that you feel as though the world is just so complex and big and the universe is just so huge that there really has to be something that's driving this, you know, thing around. You know, somebody who's picking the rules and saying, like, this is how it's going to work.
Yeah.
And it's a natural human emotion, because our own lives, like, you know, the fact that when I wake up every day and there's, you know, there's not mass chaos around, is just the fact that there are, you know, certain mechanisms operating that I'm not fully aware of, but nevertheless there are human operators making sure that things get done, you know, that my water flows, that my electricity flows. You know, there are things out there that are beyond my control that make that shit work. So it's natural for me to assume, well, of course it's got to be the same for the universe. I would respond to them saying, well, you know, are you really willing to not question the assumption that it all has to have an operator? I mean, just, you don't have to tell them that atheism is necessarily the most logical thing in the world. But at the same time, you can say, well, have you really not considered, you know, the opposite? Are you really willing not to question your own assumptions about the fact that there is a supreme being? I mean, all that you are doing as an atheist is basically saying, I don't believe in God, and I'm not willing to go back to just sort of like this belief, this magical belief of saying, yeah, there is a God. Okay, I'm done with this question. No, you're just, I think that for most people who stop believing, going back just doesn't sound like an attractive prospect. It's just, you don't want to go back to the, you know, praying or the hoping that someone's going to answer your prayers, or even thinking that there's just a grand scheme to everything. You're just like, no, it's not, and that's pretty much my life. So I think he's right in feeling a little bit, I don't want to say dejected, but it just sounds as though the people that are around him really aren't listening, and they don't comprehend what he's trying to say. They're like, well, obviously you haven't thought this out. So I think I would just ask them, if they're really not willing to question their assumptions, how can they even think that they're right? You know, if you question your assumption, that's what really science is all about, saying, well, you know, does everything that you throw, will it always land? Mm. It turns out that no, you throw it hard enough and it will not come down. Mm. It'll keep on going.
But have you ever thought that we waste, as atheists, so much time trying to talk to these religious people that we haven't spent any time at all talking to each other and figuring out what we as atheists are doing. I mean, the whole side of atheism that bores me to death and I think is just terrible is this whole how do I convince people that I love, that I'm not stupid, and I can understand that completely, but at the same time, it's not the kind of thing that interests me personally. I accept the fact that lots of people think many of the things that I believe are stupid. I don't care.
Well, would you care if your relationships with your family was influenced by the fact that you didn't believe anymore? Like, for instance, I mean, we take it for granted that our parents don't generally give a crap about what we believe.
Well, let's look at this, because I was thinking about this, because I was thinking about, you know, our friend Galen, his roommate, right?
Yeah.
And I like her, and I'm going to hit on her and possibly and date her. But looking at her bookcase, she has books on astrology.
Yes, I know.
And stuff like that. Oh, yeah. And I'm like, now looking up and how this is going to go
she's
forward.
She's hot, but...
No, and here's the thing, is like, am I going to let that slide and just be like, okay, well, she believes in astrology and I'm just not going to, I'm not going to kick her in the teeth over it. You know what I mean? And that's kind of how I look at this situation. I mean, because it doesn't matter to me if I'm right. That's the beauty of it. It's it's a perfect sunny day.
You know what? That's you on a good mood. I fucking heard you so many times mentioning, like, did you not have a conversation with your mom about The Secret, you fucking hypocrite piece of shit?
Yeah, I made fun of her for it.
Oh, well, gee, you don't seem to care when people think about stupid things. Of course you do. It's just that on good days, you don't. On bad days, though, a person comes over to you and says, Ryan, I don't think you should go to the grocery store today because your horoscope says something bad. That's when a person, because here's the thing, you don't live in a bubble. A person's stupid beliefs will eventually affect you, and it'll affect how much you respect them. That's the problem. That's the issue where you have to, you can't surround yourself with people whose beliefs are retarded.
No,
you just can't.
No, that's the whole thing. Is it's like I'm willing to overlook these things. You just have to be willing to accept people sometimes for having dumb beliefs, and that's basically kind of what I've figured to do in these cases. And I can understand why, like when your family is like, oh, if your family feels less of you for not buying this stuff, I can understand that would be a pretty bad thing. But I would be like the sweet lozenge in my throat of justice. Would be the fact that I knew I was right.
I just don't have that same impetus. For me, I need other people that are around me to acknowledge the fact that I'm right. I'm sorry. Nah, it sounds very egotistical, but if they're turning around and saying, "Well, Jacob, your beliefs are crazy or stupid." I mean, if I'm going to let them have their beliefs, they need to have the sort of same equal respect that for mine. And if they don't, I'm sorry, I'm going to fight them for it.
I just think it's a waste of time. It's like you're trying to get out of the kids' table because it's called the kids' table, but that's where all the fun is happening. It's like, who cares? Who cares that
you know why I hate the kids' table? Because I'm too tall for it. My fucking knees keep banging on the thing. So I have outgrown the kids' table.
You obviously have some under the skin issues with the kids' table. And I'm just
let that go.
Yeah, it was an analogy. Don't look too much into it and don't go into like a I was touched kind of like thing.
Jesus Christ, never that much.
No, not touched that much.
No, you know what I hated about the kids'
just
table?
Just a little touch.
What I hated about the kids' table was always one of those things where, well, Jackie, you're young. Go to the kids' table, but I'm like 6'1", and all these other adults, fucking short, 5'1". I'm like, listen, I'm not comfortable when I'm at the kids' table. Can I please have this table? And they're like, well, you're both not adult enough to really understand what's going on at this table, and no. I'm like, wow, that's a really valid argument. Thank you very much. If you want to go back to that point, that's exactly what I hate when a person has a non-valid argument to just dismiss you of saying, well, you haven't given this enough thought. There obviously is a supreme being. You're just dumb.
Yeah, but I mean, don't you think there's a little bit of validity to my statement that, we are spending too much time
trying to convince other people?
Yeah, and to a certain degree, antagonizing and being downright... I mean, everybody knows the stereotype of the annoying atheist, right? That is like, there's no... they go to a party and they try and convince people that God doesn't exist.
I think we know who these guys are, but I think they don't represent atheists in general. Here's the thing. I mean, you got probably a handful of guys out there that are just... bashing everyone's head, saying like, religion is stupid, you're stupid if you believe, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. These guys are annoying, but I can't fucking do anything about them. And they're their own people. Mm-hmm. But now, all of a sudden, everyone's like, well, all atheists are like this. I mean, what am I supposed to do? Number one, I can't fight both. I can't fight mm-hmm. the extreme atheists, and I can't fucking fight the, you know, the religious group that are like, you see, all everything that we've been saying about you is right. Everything about you. Well, now I have to, in a weird sense, almost pick a side, right? Mm-hmm. And the side that I'm, even though the fundamental atheists, like, well, I don't even say fundamental, the hardcore atheists, mm-hmm. I find annoying. I mean, I've mentioned this countless times about, you know, different forums and how people really are annoying about mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. But in another sense, I mean, I understand their passion. What I'm hoping to do is sort of like, convince the hardcores, saying like, you know, it's great that you want to proselytize. I think you've been doing it the wrong way. But at the same time, I don't want to say it's, you know, pack up your shit and go home. I don't want to say that.
Well, here's my point of view. I feel bad for you because you have to define your atheism much more than I do. I don't even you basically forced me to be an atheist. I'm more of that couldn't give less of a shit. But it's hard to say that now that we have what 35 hours worth of me on an atheist. I'm like one of the top atheists.
You're now a fucking hypocrite. You participate in this dialogue.
I just participate because I'm bored. What else am I gonna do? You know, I'm trying to keep myself from going to the grocery store and buying junk food.
Okay, so he's bored.
This'll do it. But I mean, my point is that you have to define your atheism, and you have to explore it, and you're always having to push forward with it. Well, me, it's just more of just a statement that I don't believe in God. I don't believe there is a God, that gods exist, and that it's all pretty much foolish. And to me, it's a very simple kind of step from saying there's a God, there's not a God. It's just one step up on that, kind of like, okay, there's no God. Now let's just keep moving on with our lives, you know? It's not that big of a deal. It's just that it is being turned into a big deal by people who do believe in God. If there wasn't this big argument, then there wouldn't be a website, a podcast, or anything else. It would just be atheism would just be lumped in there with the rest of them.
I would, you know what, in a sense, I wouldn't even mind that. I mean, you're right. I do have to define myself because I'm the good atheist. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, you put that word out there, and all of a sudden you have to define what the hell that means.
Yeah.
So it is a decision on my part.
Yeah.
And in a sense, I would really rather be done with it. Mm-hmm. Just because it shouldn't be an issue. I shouldn't have to tell people why I'm good, despite the fact that I'm an atheist. I mean, the whole thing is a play on that most people really believe, like the hardcore Christians really believe that atheists are amoral, evil, and whatever. I mean, and I have to fight that. And that's like the whole purpose behind this podcast, purpose behind the website, even purpose behind the book I'm writing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just this notion that I, you know, as soon as you take the attitude, well, it really doesn't matter, and we should just sit back and it's not going to be an issue. There are people that are making it an issue,
but
I just can't sit back and say it's done. It doesn't matter anymore. I can't take that stand.
Okay, but let's take a look at this. It was Copernicus that said that the Earth rotated around the sun? Was it Copernicus that said that?
Well, he was one of the heliocentrists. I can't even pronounce it.
Yeah, I know, but is it? I mean,
he presented the heliocentric universe. He didn't present it because actually the Greeks believed in mm-hmm. that, but he postulated it.
Okay, well, let's look at another one. The Earth is flat. The Earth is round, right?
Sure.
Lots of time was wasted trying to figure out what the deal was with this, right? And now we look back and we laugh about it. And there are people who devoted their entire lives to Earth goes around the sun, and the Earth is round as well.
Yeah.
And looking back, it's just like, God damn, these fucking brilliant people were spent wasting their time trying to prove to retards that life doesn't grow out of peanut butter jars, or you can't disprove evolution because opening up a peanut butter jar and there's not life in there.
Yeah,
it's like, good point. You know, it's like, this is what we're stuck having to deal with. And I'm just, my point is, let's stop wasting our time talking to believers about what's going on with them and why they think we're stupid, and move more towards the ideas of, okay, God doesn't exist. Let's go past that. Let's stop dealing with the Earth is flat. Let's move on to more pressing issues.
Well, it's funny because until that's resolved, it is the issue. Until it's resolved, because we could say, well, in the perfect world, we don't have to worry about that, and the geniuses out there, they don't have to go writing, you know, books trying to prove what everyone should already know by now. Mm. But at the same time, the people that are non-believers, they're the ones that are making some very scary decisions. Like, they are the majority. These same people, like, that believe that the Earth was flat, or that, you know, a heliocentric viewpoint of the universe was blasphemy. I mean, a guy like Galileo gets, you know, almost burned just for even postulating it. Now, you could say, well, he shouldn't have given a shit, and you should just let people believe stupid things. You can't, because it really fucks up the world when you let people have that much control over information and knowledge. And if you sort of like take a step off and be like, well, it'll work itself out. I'm like, no, it won't.
Yeah, but we're not on that edge anymore.
We're not on that edge
because of Obama.
You know what?
We're not sunshine.
This is not the Obama show. This is not the Obama show. Okay, let's move on to the next question. Or did you want to deal with something else?
I just wanted to wrap it up. I was just saying that it doesn't feel like we're on that same edge anymore. You go to any of the stands. Afghanistan, Iraqistan, Iranistan, Kerblockistan.
No stands, yeah. If you got a stand, any
of the stands, then you realize what on the edge is all about. But I mean, at this point, to me, I'm like, we're off the edge. Let's move forward and let's start talking about more
different stuff.
Let's, you know, I mean, if we're not able to discuss, if we're not able to take the atheist concept past just being opposed to, against theists, then I think that's pretty shallow.
Well, I think,
and I understand that kind of. I'm sorry, Pepe, that I kind of just was like, you're asking the wrong question, man.
You totally dissed him. You're a jerk. Okay, let's move on to the next one. This one's kind of interesting. I don't know if you'll have much to say about this one, but we'll see.
Oh, I might not. Maybe I will.
Maybe you will. Okay, from my question is about a Word doc my mom sent where the supposed evidence of the existence of Jesus and the truth of the New Testament. I'm going to email her a response to it, but I don't have a lot of knowledge about Tacitus or other historians mentioning Jesus, although I remember hearing that there wasn't much about it and have a few ideas on counterarguments. So I was wondering what you thought about the evidence. So basically he's asking us, what are your thoughts of the evidence of a historical Jesus? Because the document that he sent me, it's a fairly lengthy document, basically goes into saying, well, you know, Tacitus, Herodotus, all these guys, Josephus, they wrote about Jesus, they talked about him, this is the historical proof, and they use also another unique line of evidence that I haven't seen before. They say, well, here are the amount of copies of Josephus' books, which I think is about 20. And meanwhile, in the Old Testament, by I don't know what year, there were 5,000 volumes. So he's like, well, since there were 5,000 volumes, it's unlikely that they were doctored. This must be the true word of God, so on and so forth. That's one of their lines of argument, which is fairly unique in the fact that, you know, when I tell you, only for a fraction of a second does that seem to make sense, and then you're like, that doesn't make any sense.
It's a pretty huge judgment leap, you know? It's like, well, this, then this, and I'm like,
But it's more about, he's asking specifically about the question of the historical evidence for Jesus, and if you really want to answer that question, here's an interesting, I don't want to say dichotomy, but it's probably the best way to describe it, because you know who C.S. Lewis is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So C.S. Lewis, for those of you who don't know, he wrote...
Alice in Wonderland and all that.
No, he wrote The Chronicles of Narnia.
Ooh, damn it. Oh, I messed it up.
Yeah.
All those guys with, like, letter names.
Oh, my.
C.S. Carroll. Was it a Carroll?
I believe so, yeah.
There you go.
Anyway, C.S. Lewis, Chronicles of Narnia. Now, if you've never read Chronicles of Narnia, I mean, it is...
Man, that would have been...
It is essentially, like, the Christian... The Christian mythos described in a different sense.
That would have been a really embarrassing Jeopardy moment, what was that? Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Ooh, that would have been like a $500 fuck up. It's like, your game is over.
You know what would have been great? You would have responded confidently to that one. And that's what's best about those kinds of embarrassing moments, where a person's like, of course I know who he is, duh. And then all of a sudden it's like, you were wrong. And you're like, ouch.
And next thing you know, you have like millions of hits on YouTube. You're like, that's
not
me.
Not the right kind, not the right
it's
kind.
It's like, that's me. Yeah, it's in the Middle East, all right. It is in the Middle East.
Ah, come on, let's not talk about that no more.
We'll never stop bringing that up.
All right, now here's what C.S. Lewis said about Jesus, because you could take the position of saying, well, Jesus may have existed as a historical person, and if it's true, then he was a great moral teacher, right? Here's the stance. Here's C.S. Lewis' stance on this. A man who is merely a man and said the sort of things Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. He would either be a lunatic on the level with a man who says he is a poached egg, or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make that your choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman or something else. But let us not come with this patronizing nonsense about his being a great human teacher. He has not left that open to us. He did not intend to. So C.S. Lewis makes an interesting argument. He says either he's the Son of God. Yeah, Victorian bitch. Either he's the Son of God, who C.S. Lewis believed, or he's a batshit crazy motherfucker. And you know what? In a weird sense, he's kind of right, but for the wrong reasons. He's right in saying, well, you could look at Jesus as a moral teacher, but if you did that, you can't ignore some of the crazy stuff that he said or did, you know? If it's historically accurate. Again, this is the assumption that everything that has been written on him is accurate. Well, if that's true, then C.S. Lewis is right. Either he is the Son of God or he's a madman. And I mean, come on. I mean, if it was those two equally possible, you know, choices, I mean, what one do you think it is? I mean, seriously. Because if you want to go back and you want to try to use the history of Jesus, say, like, even with what Josephus or Tacitus said, I mean, they mention him in about one line. And there's every reason to believe that these have been doctored or altered in some way. I mean, the only thing they talk about Jesus Christ, they talk about a figure called Christus. That's it. Never any detail about what he said, what he did. Nothing. Just the fact that there was a guy called Christus, he had some followings, and that's it. But we also know that there were plenty of other guys around that time, like Apollonius of Tyana, for instance, that has almost the exact same story of Jesus. I mean, it could have been Apollonius that we'd be, you know, praying to, but nobody believes that Apollonius is a god, despite the fact that many of his legends are almost exactly the same as Jesus.
Yeah, Mexico would be overflowing with Apollonian Sanchez's.
Yeah, I am Apollonius Sanchez. Yeah. But you understand what my point is, basically saying, you know, if you want to talk about the historical evidence of Jesus, the best historians are going to tell you that at best, there just really is no solid evidence. If you want to look through the Bible for the evidence, it's kind of you know, useless. That's not how history works. You don't just look at one manual and say, well, it existed because this one thing said he existed.
Yeah, that's some pretty 1984 level reasoning, right?
Yeah, it's pretty much the most circular reasoning that you can come up with. And you know, if you're talking about other historical figures, that you could say, well, there's almost as much evidence to suggest that Nero was, you know, sort of like a figment of historical imagination than Jesus. And the whole point is that Nero doesn't just appear in one book. Nero appears in just a number of ways, on coinage from that period, in, you know, casual writings from people about, you know, laws that he passed, so on and so forth. I mean, the amount of historical evidence comes from so many different sources that it's fairly obvious that Nero did exist. But if you're down to talking about the historical evidence of Jesus, you cite three historians of dubious, you know, sort of, you know, historical standings, especially concerning the fact that all of their works were reprinted by Jesuit monks. I mean, come on. There's no temptation there to even add in a couple little lines there. I mean, give me a break. And even if that was true, they did such a terrible job at it that, what, three sources? You have three sources. That is just the saddest thing I've ever heard in my life.
You can also take a look at all the bullshit from the past that has come forward. I mean, it's like, if people are buying this whole Atlantis thing.
Oh, man. Yeah. The fact that Atlantis is mentioned in only one book is a pretty good example. I mean, it's mentioned in Plato's Republic, and that's it. And you can have an entire mythology based on it. And you're like, well, you know, Plato was an old, you know, wise man. Of course, he must not have made that up. It was just kind of a, you know, at the time, it was just used as a way to explain a utopic society that no longer exists. I mean, you might as well just say, I don't know, the third moon of Endor or something like that is where a great civilization grew. You're not going to say, well, these were wise men. Of course there's a place called Endor, and of course it has three moons.
Because Lucas wrote it, so.
And Lucas would never lie to us.
And then he hid in a refrigerator and was blown out of the house by a nuclear explosion, and he survived.
He survived because he is Indiana Jones. You know what? If you wanted proof that any man is God, it must be Indiana Jones, because honestly, surviving a nuclear explosion when in the fridge is a fairly, you know, impressive feat. If by impressive you mean raping my childhood. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on.
Have we really? So we've answered the question basically. Okay, I'd say that you've given some pretty good solid.
I think you know what, like the amount of criticism on those three historians is fairly obvious. You can just search for them on the web and you're going to see. I don't want to just put my tinfoil hat on and say, well, any mention that these guys have is obviously fraudulent. But even the mention, like even how much Christ is actually mentioned is not. You wouldn't consider that any historical evidence. There's no historical evidence is showing that a person has a particular impact, like you know that he. What's a good example? Like you know, most historical figures, their historical impact is they're documented.
Okay,
their policies are enacted. There's a bureaucracy surrounding them.
Let's look at Nero. Nero is the example of you saying, okay, Nero showed up, Nero did all this stuff, and blah blah blah.
Sure.
Now let's look at Jesus. How long after Jesus kicked the bucket did basically
anybody write
Christianity kind of sweep through the Roman Empire and bork it?
Well, okay, so the New Testament, the best numbers we have is usually around 50 to 100 AD is when it's written. That's if you believe in sort of like the time of death of Jesus, there's at least two generations after his death that anybody writes about him. Now, the first writings actually come from St. Paul. And St. Paul basically just wrote about a guy called Jesus, but he mentions only his... his return, his death, and his resurrection, kind of a thing, as like a kind of a Macbeth character, actually. You know, you come back, whole empire is kind of fucked up, you try to take control, and then you get killed. Then after that, everything else from the New Testament is based on the writings of St. Paul. So, you know, Matthew, Luke, John, and Mark basically write about Jesus, and only two of these guys actually talk about his... him growing up and so on and so forth. And these two guys, and one of these guys doesn't even mention the virgin birth. So if you want to deal with sort of like, you know, the problems, it become immediately obvious in the Bible that there really is no consensus about what the hell happened. And this is within the Bible itself. No consensus.
Tell you the truth, growing up, I always kind of wondered why they told the same story like five times. I was like, this seems a bit strange. I didn't understand what was going on.
I mean, even the lineage described, I think, in Matthew and Mark are different. Like, they don't have the same... Because basically what they try to do is say, Jesus is the son or is the descendant of King David, right? But the descendancy changes in both books. It's not the same. Now, you have to understand from the
But I thought he was the son of descendant of King David, so I guess he's got a bit of David's DNA... If they believe in that,
right? Which is weird because the lineage, from what I understand, comes from Joseph, but he's not the biological father according to the virgin birth story. So now you're just like, well, what the hell is it? Now you're saying like, well, okay, Mary is actually the part of that lineage rather than Joseph. I mean, it's not even freaking clear. They don't even know. They can't even get their story straight.
So basically, it's pretty hard to disprove the lie because the lie is so ridiculous.
It's so convoluted. I mean, at one point you could say, well, Matthew says this. And then a person could turn around and say, well, Mark said that. So it's fine. And there seems to be no problem that there is no... You know, no consensus. They'll create consensus. For instance, I heard some argue that the difference in lineage was due to the fact that what was it again? The excuse that it was like I don't know some historical, not even a mistake. That it was just a different way to describe the lineage. And I'm like, that doesn't even make any sense. Like a lineage is a lineage. You're the son of this. You're the son of that. It's not like, well, you're the second cousin of this person who was the third cousin. So that makes that. That fits that guy in. That's how we fit that guy in. And I'm just like, no, you can't do that. If you're trying to describe, all right, who the ascendancy of all the Roman emperors, you have to have a pretty solid historical evidence. If two guys came together and had different lineages for who was emperor at what time, you'd be like, whoa, dude, you're something's not right. One of these is right, or the other is right. They can't both be right. So even the internal consistency of the Bible is terrible. It's not consistent. It is what you would expect from taking a bunch of different works and trying to jam them all together to create a historical Jesus rather than an allegory, which is what Jesus was in the writings of St. Paul. He was an allegory. He was just a kind of a story to well, to introduce the concept of original sin for St. Paul. He's that psychotic motherfucker who just basically says that every human being is born with sin, and you know, that's why you have to be baptized, because we all inherit the original sin, and Jesus died in order to be able to absolve us from that
sin. So basically the inventor of Jesus wrecked him right from the beginning. It was only later when people softened him up and made him that cuddly Jesus that is so awesome.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people actually say that Paul of Tarsus was a pretty fucked up guy, like, you know, psychopathic in his obsession with pain and blood libel.
So actually, Paul, 60 years later, two generations later, definitely existed then.
Paul of Tarsus, there is absolute evidence that he existed. In fact, he was one of the most prolific writers. He wrote, like, I think 10,000 letters on the subject. St. Paul existed. In fact, the reason why Christianity exists is because of St. Paul. He's the one who took, basically, the Jewish religion and gave it to the Gentiles. That's St. Paul. St. Paul existed. Mm-hmm. Well, he was Paul of Tarsus, but they gave him a saintly name, obviously. I mean, you know, if you're the big dog, yeah, you probably get, you know, upgraded. You get a promotion. You're the president. Yeah. That's what a saint is, a president. But yeah, just to go back to that point, I mean, like, look, the if you really want to do your research, there's plenty of stuff out there. I mean, I'm no expert. I just know that basically anybody who makes a claim that there is solid historical evidence for Jesus is lying to you, or he's delusional. Because serious historians may admit that there was possibly a Jesus, but only a very, very Catholic one will tell you that they actually existed.
And I guess it's for another episode, probably we can talk about, does it really matter if he was real or not? Well, I guess actually to religious people it does, but just as far as...
It didn't matter to everybody. It didn't matter to the Gnostics. Mm-hmm. The Gnostics were sort of like a branch of Christianity that was essentially snuffed out. They were the ones who loved the allegory. They're like, look, it's just a lesson. It's a moral homily about how we live our lives. You know, it's like showing the sacrifice of a man-god in order to, you know, like for his love for his fellow man. I mean, that's kind of the message. The historical Jesus actually is a bit more misogynistic and I think more cruel than the Gnostics. But, you know, as a political tool, it's a lot more effective. You know, as soon as you're like, well, he historically existed, he said these words, you have to listen to exactly what I say because I'm the man who commands these words. I can understand that kind of like appeal and power and why that would spread rather than Gnosticism. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Gnosticism are kind of those fruity hippie guys who don't really give a shit what everybody else believes. Yeah, they had to go.
Yeah.
They had to go. Okay, here's another question. This is from Ryan. I think you're going to like this one, actually.
What, just because of the guy's name?
No. But also because of his name.
He's already plus one in my book.
He's plus one. With respect to the South Park episode, where there's basically, he talks about the South Park episode where there's those atheists of the future that battle one another. You know, the Atheist Alliance.
In the name of science.
In the name of science and stuff like that. So he says, with respect to that South Park episode, I think that these elements of moral objectivism play out, because he basically says religion and science battle it out to assert whose truth is better, with science attempting to invoke persuasiveness of objectivism to assert their views. However, since these theories are all just speculation and not concrete proof, aren't we just emoting them? And if we're emoting, aren't we just back to religion again? So if the South Park hypothetical future, is the South Park hypothetical future possible? Is it possible that basically in our quest to make atheism the truth, that we battle each other over what that truth is? Sort of like, well, I don't believe in God, but that my group has the better non-belief in God. He's basically asking, is the South Park episode, does that make sense? What do you think? Are you thinking about it?
I'll let you go first.
All right. Here's what I think. I think that, I mean, the episode was funny. I enjoyed it. Do I think that atheist groups could, fight each other? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're human beings. They could fight each other for a variety of reasons. If atheism was associated with any political control, like saying, well, you need to not believe in God, but you also have to believe in the following assertions, then yeah, anytime you take atheism out of the context of not believing in God and trying to associate a moral code or anything else with it, you run the danger of it being an institution. And any institution can become corrupt. Anytime you love something too much, anytime you're not willing to question your own assumptions, yes, you are capable of doing all manner of terrible deeds.
Okay, I understand what you're talking. Because I didn't remember the episode very well. I forgot that there's that part where it's basically atheist battling atheist because of different interpretations of atheism.
Right.
I don't know if it would go that far into it actually being a battle over what people perceive atheism to be, because it's pretty straightforward. I know there's arguments between atheists and agnostics, you know, atheists being like, get off the fence, you're an atheist. Agnostics being like, shut up, no I'm not.
No, the agnostics are like, you're a religion nut-ugger.
yeah. But
that
I mean,
accusation goes on.
When you're looking at the idea of everything else, I mean, you see it all the time. I mean, there's debates on science over global warming and on a thousand other little things. And I mean, all of the disputes, political disputes and everything, sure, they might dress it up with religion, but for the most part, it's down to like just very basic disagreements on what's going to make the economy work, or what's going to make the climate work, and what's going to make these treaties work, and what's good for us and what's bad for you and all this. I mean, it's the whole point is once we get rid of religion, that's just going to be one less thing we have to argue about.
Yeah, you know, I think what the South Park guys, I mean, if they were trying to make a political statement, I would say that they were wrong, because, I mean, in terms of atheism, any debate that goes on in atheist circles is just, I mean, the finer details of saying, well, this constitutes as, you know, proof that God doesn't exist, or this constitutes as proof. But those themselves, is there a consensus that there is no God? Yeah, among the atheists, of course there is. It's just the degree of which that consensus exists that differs.
Oh, but you've seen it, and I mean, to a degree, because we are so apart from the entire atheist community. We don't get it too much, but I keep up with the atheist blogs just to look for stuff to tell you about and whatever else like that. And there's all these times where guys are like, I don't agree with what this atheist believes, and I don't think he actually represents what a real atheist is all about. And there's tons of stuff like that. Tons of stuff where people disagree quite firmly on very basic tenets of atheism. And I wish I could think up a couple of prime examples off the top of my head, but I'll have to get back to you on it. But yeah, there's tons of infighting. Tons and tons and tons. I mean, there's even, look at me. I'm saying, let these people believe what they want to believe, and you're like, we got to fight them. And that is a very core argument between atheists, as whether or not we're going to wallow in the stupidity of religion like you would suggest, and whether or not we boldly move forward.
Where there is no moving. You can't jump over those guys.
Leave,
you know what I mean?
Leave
you're
them.
Trying to leap out of that. You can't.
Don't roll in the vomit. just leave it there and keep moving forward. Just don't get involved. And see what I mean?
We go. Don't get, you know what?
Right now, don't get
involved. That means this is the last episode of The Good Atheist People. Ryan figured it out.
Oh, because all of a sudden I'm not an atheist anymore because I don't believe that we should be trying to convert all these religious people. Well screw you, buddy.
Let's go to war. Rah. Okay.
So there you go. I just manufactured our own little internal split.
Yeah, absolutely. Would that split mean that we would go to war with each other? I don't think so. Look, if you want to...
I could punch you in the face if it would make you feel better.
Let's not do that. No. I basically think that you can't look at a South Park episode and sort of take it that seriously. I mean, I don't know what the future holds. If everybody stopped believing in God tomorrow, I don't know what would happen. Would people find something else to do? Absolutely. You hope that other thing they have to do is constructive.
Yeah, but maybe...
I think that as long as we believe in things that allow us to question our assumptions, just to say, well, am I really right? I think then we're okay. If you believe in something and you refuse to change your mind, I think that's when you have a dangerous ideology. You know, if you look at people who are saying, oh, well, communism, they got rid of religion, and that's why all these terrible things happen. The reason why terrible things happen is because people believed in communism. You know, they... Do you think Stalin questioned his own assumptions? Absolutely not. You know, for him, it was just a matter of cleaning up the rabble that didn't see necessarily his own vision. And maybe in his own brain, that vision was beautiful. I don't fucking know. I don't care. The point is, when you love something too much and not willing to sort of question it, like saying capitalism is the best system that we have, no question about it. Communism works. That's it. No debate. I'm like, as soon as you take that position, then anything can become poisonous and terrible.
So you hear that, everybody? Jake says, question democracy, because it might not be the best.
Well, question democracy in the way that it's even handled now, because democracy as we understand it now is kind of a malleable thing. Do you really think that going to the polls, for instance, is democratic? Do you think that 54% of people voting to not allow homosexuals to marry is good? Do you think that, that democracy is always a sort of one of those blanket things, it's just going to make sure that everybody is happy and you can just go around, you know, throwing flowers and singing songs? No, there are problems with it. Yeah. The tyranny of the majority is a serious problem with democracy. But it's one of those things where, as long as we question our own assumptions of saying, well, democracy isn't always doesn't always ensure that people, you know, live good lives, then you all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, if I am willing to question that assumption, I can always make sure that it doesn't get out of hand, that I don't just listen to the, you know, the ideology blindly. Mm. I think that's the danger of anything. Like, if I believe in that there is no God 100% and no one can ever change my mind, there's a problem there. Mm. There's a giant problem. I'm like, if you want to convince me, if there is any evidence to, I'm more than open to it, but it's got to be good. It's got to be good.
It's got to be on par with, like, Monty Python, a big foot coming out of the sky.
It's got to be pretty damn good. Yep. All right, let's move on to our next question.
Wow, we got more questions.
We have more questions. Awesome. Well, you said you wanted to make this a long show, so I figured these four questions.
Well, because you slacked off and didn't release one last week. What's up with that?
I was busy working on the book, actually.
Oh, busy.
All right, this is from Jack. Hey, Jacob, I've been listening to your podcast for the past few months, only recently becoming a self-proclaimed atheist, either late November or early December last year, rather than just being a Christian in name only. I read parts of The Case Against God by George Smith. Quite a good book, a bit philosophical for the layman, but it does provide many good arguments. I have a good question for you, or rather something to bring to your attention that might be worth a few moments. The American atheists are having a convention in Atlanta in April or May. Basically, they say, naturally, they have Dawkins speaking, but what piqued my interest was that there's a giant de-baptism ceremony under the heading Special Events. I am not particularly big on metaphysical ceremonies and rituals as a smack of ridiculousness, yet this de-baptism is just silly. What is there to de-baptize if nothing occurred in the first place? Is this a common thing in atheist communities?
Wow, I'm like, that is... That's hilarious.
That's hilarious.
These atheists are de-baptizing people with a ridiculous ceremony. Is that what they're planning on doing?
Yeah, I looked at it. It is serious. It's a massive de-baptism.
There's two ways to look at it, or you can look at it the both ways. You can look at it, number one, it's a big slap in the face to religious people. It's basically just they're trying to, you know, it's the kind of thing that'll get them pressed the week coming up to all the newspapers.
It's a backhanded slap, basically, to religions. Yeah. Like, smack.
But number two, it's once again, it's rolling around in that vomit.
It is a bit of that.
To the extreme, it's putting it in your mouth and playing with it. It's like, don't do that. Don't put it in your mouth, Timmy. Because now people don't take you seriously.
This is an example of where what you were saying before is right. This is one of those things where you just, why are you going there? Why are you even dealing with this? You're giving some kind of credence to baptism in the first place.
But then again, Jacob, ridiculous. Weren't you the guy that defended that dude who stole the host and put a nail through it and stuff like that? Isn't it the same kind of thing? Isn't it the same kind of stupid?
The reason I defended that was because he was making a statement against this one guy who was practically kicked out of his university for not eating the Eucharist. You know what I mean? He was just...
I thought he was kicked out because he stole the Eucharist, and then
he basically stole it. But then for them stealing it was he put it in his mouth and he didn't eat it. He just left with it.
Yeah, he left with it, and then he was like, "Ha ha! Don't try and fucking look. I have no problem with you.
It doesn't matter.
You're softening this up. You're being like Fox News here. You're softening up this guy's case. Well, it is the same thing.
Then you know what? In terms of the desecration, quote unquote, of the Eucharist, because here's the thing: in terms of the biggest mortal sins, defiling the Eucharist is up there. I mean, forget rape, murder, whatever. Mm-hmm. These are not serious sins that the Catholic Church is worried about. It's worried about the Eucharist being desecrated. It's worried about priests sort of like talking about what they're like, what goes on in confessions. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it. Child molestation, all these other kind of things. These do not concern them. The biggest threats to them are the defiling of a piece of bread in their church ceremonies. And I'm not going to put this on par with this whole de-baptism thing, because the de-baptism thing is one of those you want to reclaim yourself and get out of your Christian identity, and I can kind of understand some people might need that. There's a bit of a separation anxiety that can come from, you want to almost start over, hit the reboot button. But at the same time, I'm thinking this is actually the wrong way to do it. I think that in a sense you should be able to let go of the whole thing. You should be able to say it doesn't really matter that I was baptized.
If you're logically thinking it through, then it shouldn't matter. And then the second that you have to actually go through and do this,
debaptizing thing. I mean, you know what? I don't want to criticize it too much because who knows? Maybe it's just going to be at a kegger and we're blowing it way out of proportion.
Yeah,
and it's basically just something that they put together to really get in the face of all these people. This is in Atlanta, you said?
Yeah.
Because I was like, hell, I mean, we can go to Atlanta. My parents live down there. So, yeah, maybe.
We can be guests of honor.
No, yeah, we'll just go and drink lots of beer at the kegger.
I don't think it's a kegger.
Duh.
But let's start a kegger.
Because if it's not a kegger...
Let's start a debaptism kegger, you know?
Drink this beer, and you shall be free.
Exactly. And rather than dip your head in water, just dip it in, you know, beer.
Yeah.
Or vodka.
I like it.
Actually, if you did that, I wonder if your hair would turn kind of like all white, you know, bleach it kind of thing.
I don't know.
It could be. I don't know what happens when you douse a person in, you know, really strong vodka.
Ask Russian. I'm sure they know. I'm sure it's happened.
Did you say ask Russian?
Ask a Russian.
Oh, I thought you said ask Russian.
Ask the Russians.
Ask the Russians. Okay, so basically, I do think that it is relatively silly. It's a back slap to anybody. It's going to get impressed, though.
Yeah, and it's a pretty good slap.
It's a pretty good slap. Okay, this is from Lee. This is our last question. Although the campaign may work well for Closet, he's talking about the whole out campaign, and he says, "Is it a good idea?"
Well, like be a homo, be out, get out.
Basically, that's the whole thing about
mobilizing gay people into dealing with all these political whatevers. He said,
"Well, there's also a movement in atheism called the out campaign."
Oh,
so you're like, well, you remember that Scarlet A like shirts? That really crappy looking shirt with a giant A on it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was part of that campaign, saying like, "Look at me, I'm an atheist."
And they decided to use "out" as the name for this campaign.
I believe so.
Ooh,
yeah.
Marketing fail.
And basically, Lee's asking that, you know, whether or not it's a good idea. He says, "I was wondering what your thoughts were about this, and whether you think that more good than harm can be achieved through this intentional meme jacking." Because he's basically saying, here you are taking the sort of like homosexual out campaign and saying like, hey, we want to be part of this too, and we're coming out of the closet as well.
Yeah.
And he's also asking, well, if you come out of the closet to someone, is there a danger of people sort of associating the two movements? Because say you're telling your parents that you're an atheist and they're religious, if you come out in the sort of like way that say homosexual would come out, are you making that association? Are you making it even more difficult for them to sort of accept the fact that you're not religious now? What do you think?
I don't know. I'm just having a hard time getting past. I mean, to me, I think it's kind of an unfair co-opting of gay people's thing. I mean, and here's the thing. Maybe I just don't have the right context because I never grew up around a lot of religious people and I never really had to take much flack for anything. And I know that there's lots of people whose lives are just as screwed up because of religion as it would be for, say, homosexuality. But I just say that it almost seems kind of flippant that they're just kind of hitching their trolley onto the gay movement.
I think it's a disservice to the gay movement because I think it takes away some of their steam. And mm-hmm. you know, if atheists want to make a big statement, I think that they need a different campaign.
It's like all those motherfuckers with the different ribbon colors, and then all those motherfuckers who stole the wristbands. I'm like, get your own goddamn thing.
Yeah, get your own thing. Make I don't know. Glasses or something, like some new or unique at least.
I'm glad you're not in charge of thinking up new
memes.
I'm
just not a marketing kind of guy. I'm not good at this. But I will tell you that I do think, like I said, I mean, it's a bad idea because it's not even so much the association. It's just, it's got to be its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Because I mean, the difference between homosexuality and atheism, that's huge.
It is
so, so huge. And it muddies the water for homosexuals, and I'm like, you can't do that.
No,
we need to do our own thing.
They got their thing to work out. We got ours. Mm-hmm. I think that there's this tendency to for both movements to kind of see, you know, like there's an advantage in working together. Mm-hmm. You know, because a lot of religious groups are anti-gay, and I have yet to meet many atheists who were themselves homophobic. I mean, there are some, obviously. I think my dad's a good example. He's an atheist and he's a homophobe. Okay,
yeah.
Well, not every atheist likes homosexuals. You've got to deal with it.
Mm.
But I think in general, you know, a lot of atheists are free thinkers, and they tell themselves, what you believe is your own business and how you act is your own business. And I can appreciate that. But again, I mean, they're two fundamentally very, very, very different movements. And I think the association actually waters down both of these movements.
Yeah.
The atheist movement has to come out on its own. and sort of like, you know, and the way that it does that is not just telling other people that you are an atheist. I think it's making the case for atheism that's more important.
Mm-hmm.
Because once the case is made for it, you know, telling a person that's what you believe too should be no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and gay people are making the case of saying, like, this is not a lifestyle, this is just how I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they got to deal with.
Yeah.
But it's on two very, very different ideological lines. They are not related. They're only related because we're being shit on.
Mm-hmm.
That's our common ground. But if that common ground wasn't there, what really would we have? I mean, yeah. I know that there are gay atheists, and I know that there are straight atheists. So what? I mean, correlation? Not there. Not there. So creating that, co-opting that, I think it's cheap. I think it's fucking cheap.
Mm.
All right. That's it? Are we done? Anything else you wanted to say?
No, I think I'm all good.
All right, groovy. All right, that's almost 1 hour, so everybody gets a nice long episode. I don't know. People usually like the half-hour thing, so you can suck it if that's what you like. You get a full hour.
Just break it up into two servings somehow.
Yeah, well, you know...
I'm not sure how.
I think that there are options and play options or something that allow a person to break it up into different segments, but I don't know.
Yeah, eat a little bit now, save the end for later. But now that you've heard the whole show and you're like, I wish I thought of that, I'm like, think for yourself.
Yeah, come on, man.
That's the message.
That's the real campaign. It should just be a think for yourself, dog.